Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Irish bishops' feedback. We have a full report on the conclusion of the two-day meeting between Pope Benedict and the Catholic bishops of Ireland aimed at helping to resolve the crisis over the sexual abuse of children by clerics and religious. Pope and Ash Wednesday. Pope Benedict looks at today's solemn celebration of Ash Wednesday and reminds us that during the season of Lent, we are called to penance and spiritual renewal. Lenten message and memories. Jesuit priest and journalist Father Matthew Gamba looks at the theme of justice chosen by the Pope for his Lenten message this year and reminisces about his own childhood memories of Ash Wednesday and Lent. And Lenten stations. We find out more about this tradition dating back to the 3rd century, where the faithful in Rome journey each day of Lent to a station church or one of the ancient and prominent churches of the city. Vatican, Pope Benedict told Irish bishops who attended 2 days of talks on the crisis over the sexual abuse of children by clerics in Ireland that paedophilia is a heinous crime that they must address with resolve. The Pope also urged the Irish bishops to show honesty and courage in confronting the crisis, saying he realised that the current painful situation will not be resolved quickly. Emma McCarthy picks up the story.
Speaking at a news conference Tuesday afternoon, Cardinal Sean Brady of Armagh, who leads the island nation's bishops, left no doubt as to the issue at the heart of the 2 days of talks between Pope Benedict, prefects of the Roman Curia, and the nation's 24 leading churchmen.
The question of victims was a main concern right throughout the meeting.
A Vatican press statement released shortly after the conclusion of the two-day meetings, before the bishops met with journalists, said that Pope Benedict had spoken to them of the heinous crime of sex abuse, which he said offends God and wounds the dignity of the human person. But perhaps most importantly for the victims of sexual abuse and the ordinary Catholics in Ireland, a second issue was also discussed at length. The issue of episcopal responsibility in failing to act effectively in dealing with cases involving the sexual abuse of young people by some Irish clergy and religious. Cardinal Brady was joined at the press briefing by fellow bishops Joseph Duffy of Clogher, Michael Smith of Meath, Seamus Hegarty of Raphoe, and Dennis Brennan of Ferns.
We all know that there's great anger out there and it's richly deserved. We haven't handled this crisis well by any means, so the anger is richly deserved. We accept that. We understand that.
Speaking Monday and Tuesday to the bishops, Pope Benedict had warned that the current painful situation will not be resolved quickly, but he also challenged the bishops to address the problems of the past with determination and resolve, and to face the present crisis with honesty and courage.
See, when we talk about a deepening of a sense of unity among the bishops,
echoing the Pope's words Tuesday, Bishop Duffy of Clogher spoke of how ruptures in Irish church leadership have affected their joint effort to resolve the crisis created in the wake of the Ryan and Murphy reports.
Now we're coming from a culture of secrecy and confidentiality, which admittedly was overemphasised in the past. Now, in order to move from that culture of secrecy, we've got to share.
Indeed, Pope Benedict told the Irish bishops that one of the main aims of the extraordinary two-day meeting was to help to unify the bishops and enable them to speak with one voice in identifying concrete steps aimed at bringing healing to those who had been abused and encouraging the renewal of a weakened faith in Christ's church in Ireland.
We know they feel disillusioned. As I said, I came from a listening process with a parish last Thursday night, 70 people in a country parish in County Louth up near the border with Northern Ireland. And they left me in no doubt about their disillusionment, their anger, their shame, their sense of betrayal. But they said they are hanging in there because they believe that Jesus Christ is with his church to the end of time.
Cardinal Brady gave examples of these steps, which he revealed are being drawn up in collaboration with the victims of abuse and lay faithful.
They want us to be out and about, to pray with them, because that is a great witness too.
Departing from the press conference Tuesday, on his return to the faithful of Ireland, Cardinal Brady said that on this eve of the great Lenten period, one concrete step towards healing is penitence.
There have been failures, of course, in our leadership. And as one of the victims told us down in Maynooth, the only way we will regain that credibility would be through our humiliation. Tomorrow is the beginning of Lent. It's the time of penance. And we must begin with ourselves.
I'm Emma McCarthy. On Wednesday, Pope Benedict XVI dedicated his morning audience to exploring the meaning of two formulae that characterise Ash Wednesday: repent and believe the gospel, and you are dust, and to dust you shall return.
This call to conversion is expressed in the two formulae used in the rite of the imposition of ashes. The first formula, turn away from sin and be faithful to the gospel, echoes Jesus' words at the beginning of his public ministry. It reminds us that conversion is meant to be a deep and lasting abandonment of our sinful ways in order to enter into a living relationship with Christ, who alone offers true freedom, happiness, and fulfillment. The second, older formula, remember, man, that you are dust, and to dust you shall return, recalls the poverty and death which are the legacy of Adam's sin, while pointing us to the resurrection, the new life, and the freedom brought by Christ, the second Adam.
Speaking in Italian, he told the 7,000 pilgrims who filled the Paul VI audience hall that the 40 days of preparation for Easter are a favourable time to change the direction of our lives, by no longer following the superficial trends of moral mediocrity, but rather the high standard of Christian spirituality.
This Lent, through the practice of prayer and penance, and an ever more fruitful reception of the Church's sacraments, may we make our way to Easter with hearts purified and renewed by the grace of this special season. Upon all of you invoke God's blessings of joy and peace.
I'm Emma McCarthy.
Later in the day, as is the tradition on Ash Wednesday, Pope Benedict was due to preside at Mass with the blessing and imposition of the ashes in the Basilica of Santa Sabina on Rome's Aventine Hill. Lent is the 40-day season of prayer, fasting and almsgiving that precedes Easter, and in his Lenten message this year, the Pope focuses specifically on the theme of justice through faith in Jesus Christ. Pope Benedict says conversion to Christ gives people the strength to break the bonds of selfishness and work for justice in the world. The Christian, he said, is moved to contribute to creating just societies where all receive what is necessary to live according to the dignity proper to the human person and where justice is enlivened by love. Jesuit priest and journalist Matthew Gamba says the Pope's choice of theme for this year's Lenten message is both apt and timely.
Well, as a Jesuit, our commitment is to faith and justice. So that term justice is extremely important in our apostolic mission. But the Pope is saying this is the mission of the whole church, really. And he's saying that ultimately the mission of the church is love. But you can't have love if there is no justice. You know, justice is a minimum on the way to love, or love must flow into works and situations and counsels of justice. So I think it is really brilliant and something so very much needed today.
Because, as you say, modern society tends to just be concerned with material things, and people can so often easily forget about the plight of the hungry in developing countries, the sick and the needy, even those right around us.
Absolutely. There is still a sense of marked injustices in the world, and economic injustices, social injustices, human rights issues, all these things that really go into the human community. And the church is always interested in the condition of the human person. And where there is no justice, we have to work for it. And so I think the Holy Father has given us all that mission.
Okay, turning now to Ash Wednesday and the start of Lent, can you reflect for us on what Ash Wednesday meant to you when you were a child growing up, and perhaps share with us some of your memories?
Grew up in the Chicago area, so usually Ash Wednesday hit around, in the heart of winter. And so it was kind of that cold, blustery, snowy season. And yet, always the promise of Easter at the end, because our family would go away on vacation to somewhere warm for Easter week, either to Florida or out to the desert in Arizona. So for us, it was the beginning of really looking forward to Easter, but by way of Lent. And my parents very much celebrated the liturgical season at church, but also at home. So Tuesday night before Ash Wednesday, probably we'd have steak or beef of some kind. And then Ash Wednesday, everyone was up. We attended Catholic school, so the reception of ashes was incorporated into the day life at the school. But it was a very solemn day, a very special day, a very significant day, and one that I think marks everyone, but certainly students at Catholic schools in the United States, for their whole life.
Did you find, though, that people who weren't Catholics were rather baffled by this custom of putting ashes on the forehead?
I see that more and more these days because, interestingly enough, in the United States, there is a great interest on Ash Wednesday. I mean, our churches are packed to the gills, out the door, around the block in some places, down in the cities. And everyone gets their ashes and then proudly wears them all day. So it becomes a point of interest, and there's always articles about it and explanations about it. As a child growing up, you know, the whole family wore them. It was more of a contest to see how long you could keep your ashes on in the course of a day. And then my parents always tried to kind of explain the significance of things, what this really meant. And those words, you know, remember that thou art dust and unto dust thou shalt return. I can remember thinking those are solemn and serious words. I didn't quite always understand what they mean, but that grew over the years.
And as you say, that grew over the years. And how would you say your understanding of the significance of Ash Wednesday is now? What are your feelings about it?
It's been such a, almost every year I'm in a different situation or circumstance in which I'm distributing ashes. This year, over here in the Eternal City of Rome. Last year, I was at a high school. The year before, I was at a big parish. But there's always this great interest and a great sense of preparation. And as I said, at least starting Lent off on this very serious, somber, and yet interesting, I always find the liturgy of the day talks about this joyful season that the God has given us during Lent. And that's even in the Ash Wednesday liturgy, I believe, where, yes, it's marked by ashes and marked by this memory of our ultimate death, but it's ultimately joyful season preparing us for Easter. I'm always in my preaching trying to emphasize, yes, Lent, yes, the way of the cross, yes, the way to Easter and the resurrection.
Nonetheless, Lent is seen traditionally as a time for prayer, repentance, fasting, almsgiving. Mm-hmm. How do you try personally to live out that call?
Absolutely. The three pillars, prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, are essentially important. And as a priest, to try to teach and exhort people and explain it is one thing, but also have to do it if we're going to be preaching it, you know, walk the walk. So I really strive to pray more. A few years ago, a priest challenged all of us as priests to spend an hour in Eucharistic adoration. This was about 10 years ago. And I spent that whole Lent with 1 hour of Eucharistic adoration. And it really flowed into the rest of the year. And so that's something that I do every Lent, is really try to commit myself to that hour of Eucharistic prayer, and something that I will be doing this year. Operation Rice Bowl is a wonderful program that raises money for Catholic Relief Services. When I was at a college campus, the students really got involved in it, and we raised the most of any college campus that particular year. We were somewhere in the $5,000, which for College Kids was big, and so I always loved the Operation Rice Bowl. And then in terms of fasting, you know, it's always a kind of a season where we have to take a look at our appetites for food and drink and all kinds of things. And so I'm always on a diet, and so it helps us in that regard. I know it's not supposed to be fasting and dieting, but I think everyone takes it seriously. You know, in our family, we'd always try to be, you know, parents would challenge us, you know, to try to give up something and to help us. They really helped us. And I think parents can help their families to honor that privilege. And then at the end, again, the fasting yields to the feast of Easter. And so we have to keep that in mind.
So when you say your parents helped you to give up something, what sort of things were they suggesting?
Well, they would let us decide, but then sort of, you know, they wouldn't try to tantalize us and help us. I remember one of my brothers, I'm from a family of five boys, and he gave up soda pop and really kept it all of Lent. And, you know, really, you know, my parents respected that. And I remember they bought him a big liter bottle of Coke on Easter Sunday, just for him, you know. So I guess in that regard that, you know, that they honored what he had done. You know, he was like probably a 12, 13-year-old kid. So things like that, that you kind of fill your memory books. Of the season. It's a wonderful liturgical season.
That was Jesuit priest and Vatican Radio journalist Matthew Gamba. Jesuit Father Jerry O'Collins is the former professor of theology at the Pontifical Gregorian University and author or co-author of more than 40 books. He explains why we are all Ash Wednesday people.
Years ago, I met a man who told me that he knew only one thing about Christians. It was something two of his friends at work did once a year. They both go off together at lunch hour, he told me, and when they come back, they have a little ash on their foreheads. What his friends did once a year was to go into a church on Ash Wednesday and receive the ashes. A priest will sprinkle a little ash on their foreheads and say the words, "Remember, you are dust, and unto dust you will return." Ash on our foreheads shows us what we are, people of dust and destined to die. Dust stands for death and for things breaking up. Dust is not like the beautiful rocks we can dig up in the mountains or the lovely seashells we find along the shore. One speck of dust is just like another. It doesn't belong anywhere. It's barely visible and noticeable. In a way, we're all like that, mortal human beings heading towards death. Our lives can even seem pointless and meaningless, like dust about to be blown away. An Arab friend once said to me, "Our lives begin as a drop of seed sown in desire and end as a handful of dust." Thinking that way about the start of life is perhaps a good reminder of how fragile we really are. Why am I here at all? My mother and father need never have met. Circumstances could so easily have been different and never brought them together. 6 years into their marriage, without going into the biological details, another human being could have emerged to take a place in the world. But that new person would not have been me. I need never have existed. We're all Ash Wednesday people. We exist between a drop of seed sown in desire and our end, when we will become a handful of dust. Probably this is the last thing any of us want to be told on a fine Sunday evening. I can just hear my sister-in-law saying, "Jerry, would you please be cheerful and say something positive?" Now, I'm all for being positive. God is extremely cheerful and very positive too. But God is also realistic. We too must be realistic and come to terms with what we are. Death is as important as birth. But we're not just little piles of dust to be blown away finally on the wind. We are much, much more than that, because God loves each one of us and loves us with an infinite and faithful love.
That was Jesuit Father Jerry O'Collins. Now, let's take a look at an ancient Lenten tradition of visiting station churches. It's a tradition that started in Rome as early as the 3rd century as a way to honour the ancient martyrs of the city. Each of the 40 days of Lent, the faithful make their way to a different designated station church in the city for Mass and the singing of the Litany of the Saints. Similar to the meditations of the Stations of the Cross, the 40 designated station churches offer time for meditation on the lives of the martyrs and prayers of intercession to these Roman saints. In the 6th century, the tradition was designated by Pope Gregory the Great to be a daily Lenten practice, and nowadays countless parish churches around the world have Stations of the Cross during Lent. Riley Williams is a third-year seminarian at the Pontifical North American College in Rome, and one of the organisers of this year's Station Churches practice in the city. He told Father Matthew Gamba more about this ancient Roman tradition and how it lives on today.
We always begin on Ash Wednesday at Santa Sabina with a 6:45 a.m. Mass. And then after that, every day of Lent, we have a 7 a.m. Mass at the different churches of the stational cycle.
And this is an ancient custom. It's not something that you developed yourself.
No, it's not. It began, really the first seeds of it developed in the days of even the persecutions when the Pope would go around Rome to minister to his flock. And so really the station church is just a kind of evolved form of a series of pastoral visits the Pope would make. And so then around 600-700 years after Christ, you see this becoming more fixed, and eventually every day of Lent would be celebrated by the Pope and the clergy of Rome and also the people of Rome at different churches throughout the city. And so not just on Lent, but also on other major feasts throughout the year, such as the Sundays of Advent, the Christmas season, Epiphany. And so that's continued. It's waxed and waned throughout history. But in the modern period, especially Blessed John the 23rd has led a great revival of it. And so now you have like the Pope celebrating the opening Mass of Lent at Santa Sabina, the ancient station. And then not only the North American College celebrates these Masses, but also there's a daily celebration by the Roman College of Martyrs at each of the churches, and also some other colleges like the German College will do periodic Masses at the different churches.
So every morning you will be gathering at one of these station churches. My understanding is that many of the seminarians actually walk, no matter the distance, to be there in time for 7 a.m. Mass.
And no matter the weather either.
No matter the weather.
But actually it's kind of a nice thing because you're walking, usually leave in the darkness. And so as you're walking, the sun's slowly coming, it's getting lighter outside, and then you kind of have a half hour, 45 minutes to kind of think about, what you're doing. And so it's a very kind of, it gives a pilgrimage aspect to it, and you're walking to these churches, and so the church really does become the kind of the destination. And so it's like a little pilgrimage. You go and, have Mass at usually what's one of the tombs of the martyrs or another holy site in Rome. And so it really isn't like a nice spiritual experience.
And it's not just seminarians that will be at this Mass. It is open to everybody. Okay.
Yeah, no, everyone in the city, and especially our guests, too, are invited. And so we'll get seminarians, we'll get Americans living abroad, and also a lot of local Romans will come, which is great because then you really have the whole church present in the city coming together at these Masses. And so while they're put on for the North American College, we look at it really as a service done for the faithful in the city and to help to kind of open up the spiritual treasure of the station churches to the faithful living in the city.
What would be some examples of a stational church? These are some of the very oldest churches in Rome. Is that correct?
They are, yeah. They're either shrines built over the major or the tombs of the major martyrs, such as St. Peter in the Vatican, St. Paul outside the walls, or St. Lawrence outside the walls. Then other ones will just be the original parish churches of the city. And so you have like Santa Susanna and San Clemente and like Peter in Chains too, which was built by the Byzantine emperors. And so you kind of have, it runs the gamut of the origin of these churches, but they are united by the fact that they all have very ancient foundations. And there's a couple different ways they were selected. So on the Sundays of Lent, you usually have the biggest churches. So like St. John Lateran is the first Sunday of Lent, St. Lawrence outside the walls, Holy Cross in Jerusalem, St. Peter's in the Vatican. So these are on the Sundays. But then the weekdays, the original idea of the station churches, like I said, was so the Pope could make pastoral visits throughout the city. So if you look at them on the map, they would jump between the different regions of Rome. So you might have, like, the Pope saying Mass in one part of the city on Monday, another section of the city Tuesday. And over time, some of the way the church has been set up has changed. So now you might have two or three days where churches are all fairly close to each other. But really, the original idea of it was to have the Pope going all around the city to minister to his flock, and so the whole Church of Rome could go through Lent together and arrive at Easter together.
You've done this before, organizing again this year. What's it like at the end of Lent as Easter has approached and you've been up every morning and walked to these churches at 7 a.m., sense of accomplishment or spiritual renewal? Or how would you describe last year's and what might you be expecting this year in terms of the spiritual experience?
Like I said, just going around, I mean, really taking advantage of what's in Rome and being able to go to the tombs of these martyrs and these holy places. So at the end of Lent, when you go through kind of the events of the Easter Triduum, reflecting upon what Christ is going through after having visited the tombs of so many martyrs and, you know, holy people in the city, it's kind of like you're being able to celebrate Easter together with them because you've just been through, you know, these places that are so closely associated with their lives. And so to have those memories so fresh and then to celebrate Easter, it really... it gives you the sense of being in, you know, the much wider family of the church, not only right now, but throughout history as you celebrate Easter.
Does somebody have to attend all of them? If you go to one, are you signing up to go to all 40?
Oh, yeah, no. No, any you can go to them. If you're in the city, you can come to them any day. It's 7 a.m. at all the different churches. And the Pope has given an indulgence to those who fulfill the normal requirements to attend any of the stational churches on their particular day. And so it's not something that you have to do all of them. But one thing I tell guys at the seminary, if they really want to be penitential for Lent, they can commit themselves to going to all of them. But even, you know, every Monday or every Wednesday, if you do the station church for that day, and so as well as any others who might want to. So you could do all kinds of different things with it, but it's not like a all or nothing kind of deal.
And you've managed to write a book on this.
I did, yes. Well, compile a book, I guess. So other people did the research, and I just kind of brought it all together. And
where can someone obtain that?
We sell them for €18 a piece at all of the station churches. So after Mass, towards the back of the church, either myself or my assistant, Colin Wynn, is a seminarian from Sacramento, will be selling them. And so what each of them contains, it has a brief history of the church, then a guided tour of the inside of the church, and then a little diagram showing kind of the major points. And also the street address, so you can look them up online with ease.
Excellent. So if somebody does want to go to these, how do they know what church and what day to show up at?
Well, there are lists floating around. I guess the easiest resource might be our website, www.pnac.org/stationchurches. And that station churches is all one word. So if you go on that, they have a computerized map of Rome with all the churches marked. Each church also has an individual page. And so they can go to that, and then there's a way to type in your address and get directions from wherever you are to the church.
Is there a collection taken up in the course of the station churches and these weeks of Lent?
Yes, every day we have a collection. And so this collection is used for two things. One of them is to pay for the stipends for the church. We give a small offering to each church that we use, kind of in thanksgiving for them opening up their doors to us. But then we use all the surplus money not used for the stipends for a particular charity for every year. And so we always try to do something that's pertinent to current needs in the world. So a few years ago, we gave money to the military chaplaincy for the U.S. for soldiers fighting overseas. Last year, we gave it to a pro-life charity. And this year, we've decided to use the money to help support reconstruction in Haiti. And so all 100% of profits from the station church books, and then all of the money not needed for stipends at the station churches will be going to Haiti.
That was seminarian Riley Williams from the North American College in Rome talking to Vatican Radio journalist Father Matthew Gamba. Well, that's all from Vatican Radio's English program for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. Laudato Jesus Christus.